The Mishnah is going to be one of a sequence of three Mishnayos, in which the Mishnah lists three houses, three stones that have been carved at, and three asherahs, three trees. And at least on the surface, the three Mishnayos seem to be parallel. They're structured as three different kinds, and each one seems to be roughly analogous. Whether or not there are any differences fundamentally remains to be seen. The first Mishnah talks about three batim. And Rashi comments already, and we saw this actually in the previous Mishnah, the one that's on the top of Mem Zayin Amud Beis, starting on the bottom of Zayin Amud Aleph, that the bias here is a bias that is ne'avad. It is actually worshipped. According to Rashi, it would seem that really what happens here is that they intend to bring an idol into the house itself, but they also worship the house. Rashi says, I think it's most apparent in the second and the last Mishnah on this page. If you skip for a moment ahead to the last Mishnah in Rashi, where Rashi, the Mishnah begins Shalosh Avanim Heim, and in the second line in Rashi on that Mishnah, beginning with the words Mitchila Labimus, Rashi speaks about a case where the first case in the Mishnah is a stone that was hewn, it was cut, it was shaped in order to be a bimus, and a bimus was some type of a platform on which an Avodah Zarah was going to be placed. So Rashi writes, Mekom Moshav Avodas Kochavim, the place where you sit, where you seat the idol, Shemoshiv Hatzelem Aleha, but Ve'ovdim Es Habimos Ka'avodas Kochavim Atzmo. In other words, they worship both the idol on top of it, and they worship the pedestal, the platform on which it sits. So it could very well be in our Mishnah when they talk about a bias which was built for Avodah Zarah, so it's clear, and everybody agrees, that the bias itself is worship, but it may be that the purpose wasn't just building the house, but it was actually for Avodah Zarah that was to be placed inside. As we see from the last case of the three cases in the Mishnah, when they don't actually worship the house, it has a very different din. Okay, so let's start with that. The Mishnah list says that Shlosha Batim Heim. There are three different kinds of houses in connection with Avodah Zarah. And Rashi immediately chimes in and notes, Shlosha Batim Heim Le'inyan Bitul Avodas Kochavim. As it's going to turn out from the Gemara's reading of the Mishnah, and there was more than one possible reading, in each of these scenarios, they did not actually worship the bias, meaning they didn't do it yet. It hasn't been worshipped yet. If it were worshipped yet, then there would be sort of a different din. How you would do away with the status of Avodah Zarah. Now, just as a reminder, a review of a little background information, if a non-Jew makes an idol and worships it, or if a non-Jew worships an Avodah Zarah, so it is Asur Bahana, unless the non-Jew nullifies it, he's Mevatel it. So if the non-Jew is Mevatel the Avodah Zarah, then it no longer has the Isur Hana of Avodah Zarah. If a Yisrael worships an Avodah Zarah that either belongs to him or he has the rights to worship, there is no bittul at all. There is no bittul whatsoever. It is Asur Olamis. There is another din that we've touched upon, which is the din of Mishamshe Avodah Zarah, things that are not actually worshipped themselves, but are there to service, to serve in some way, either a functional way, in a decorative way, as an adornment for the Avodah Zarah. And that's called Tashmishe Avodah Zarah, Mishamshe Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in the first perek, which I totally forgot, but the Rishonim very conveniently reminded me here. So if you were here and you forgot that Gemara, don't feel bad, because probably almost none of us remember it. In fact, if you're one of those people who remembered it, you would scare me a little bit. So the Gemara there points out that it's clear that everybody agrees that Mishamshe Avodah Zarah are Asur Bahana, but only once the Avodah Zarah is actually worshipped. In our Gemara, we're going to see in our Mishnah, the Avodah Zarah itself, and it's really going to be, we encountered this very briefly earlier in one of these sugyos, and we will explore it at length later in the next parak. Avodah Zarah itself, there are positions that if it is made as an Avodah Zarah, it is already Asur Bahana, even though nobody has worshipped it. So therefore, it is conceivable that you have an Avodah Zarah that's never been worshipped that requires bittul. But Tashmishe Avodah Zarah, things that were made to serve for Avodah Zarah, but actually haven't worshipped the Avodah Zarah yet, do not actually require bittul. So the Mishnah says, and Rashi says, with respect to bittul, are three batin. Bayis shebena'o mitchila l'avodas kochavim. Bayis number one. if you have a house which was initially built to be worshipped. So the Mishnah says, Aser. It is immediately Aser B'hana, the entire bayis. Right? A guy would have to come along, if you wanted to use it, he would have to be Mevatel, the bayis is an Avodah Zarah. So that is Bittul type 1. Bayis type 2, Siyado V'chiro L'Avodas Kochavim. If the, let's say the house was built not for Avodah Zarah purposes, but the guy now takes this house, he acquires the house, and he wants to make it, he wants to be makseh l'avodah zarah, and what does he do? He renovates it. He plasters the walls. Sido means literally, he put plaster on the walls. Chiro probably means they sort of maybe engraved on the plaster, so they made it decorative. They put like tapestries in the plaster. So, sido v'chido l'avodas kochavim. And the way the Gemara is going to understand here again is nobody has worshipped this bias yet. Then, notel masha chidesh. All you have to do is remove the additions, the renovations. In this case, it works out very simply. You just scrape the plaster off the wall. And the bias is mutar.
The first case, how is that mevatel? Why doesn't the Mishnah mention how bittul takes place in the first case?
So I think that the Mishnah makes clear from the second, it could have, but from the second line, notel masha chidesh, makes it clear that in the first case, that you can't do netila, that it's asur as avodah zarah. And the assumption is that however you deal with avodah zarah generally is the way you deal with the bayis. The chiddush of the second line in the Mishnah is that even though he has plastered it, he has renovated it for avodah zarah, if you extract or pull away the renovations, the bayis itself remains intact as being motor bahana. And
without
bittul. And the crucial point here should be made, and Rashi comments about this, about the renovations, let's say the plaster. So Rashi points out that if the guy removes the plaster from the house, so not only is the house mutter, but the plaster is mutter as well. In other words, only the plaster had the status of avodah zarah. It wasn't worshipped yet, but doesn't matter because it was added in so that the house with the plaster might be worshipped. So the plaster itself is just like a house which you build initially for avodah zarah purposes is immediately asur b'hana before anybody worships it. So too, the plaster that you put in this house that wasn't built for avodah zarah, the plaster itself is asur immediately b'hana. If the guy removes the plaster, then the guy was mevatel that is an avodah zarah. If the Jew removes it, the plaster is asur b'hana because a Jew cannot be mevatel avodah zarah, but the house itself remains mutar. So that's the second case. And the third case is hichnis l'tocha avodas kochavim v'hutzia harezem mutar. If a guy brought in avodah zarah into it, and then they took it out, then it would be mutar. Now, the first question is, in the last case, it would seem, and that's the way the Rishonim understand, hichnis l'tocha avodah zarah, nobody is worshipping the bayis. They're only worshipping the avodah zarah. Take the contemporary analog. Let's assume for the moment, and I will make this assumption, I think most poskim would, that a church, let's say, two things. Number one, that a church, there's avodah zarah inside, however you exactly decide what that is. I don't know if there's a particular chefza that's worshipped, but certainly, as we mentioned in the past, the Eucharist is certainly tekrovas avodah zarah. The bias is, nobody worships the bias. They might marvel at the architecture, but they don't worship the bias. So, from the Mishnah, it seems clear that if the machnes the avodah zarah, that right then it's aser. Right? In other words, v'hotzia, if he takes it out, then it becomes mutar. But it's clear from the Mishnah that when the avodah zarah is inside, that it is aser b'hana. The bias is aser b'hana. Which means, that why? Why is it aser b'hana? They don't worship the bias itself. So the Rishonim say the bias is aser because it's tashmishi avodah zarah. So that means that the bias is usur. It means everything inside the bias, let's say the artwork, right? Let's say the Sistine Chapel, the ceiling. So they don't worship the ceiling, but it's part of the bias. In fact, it's noye avodah zarah. So when they bring the avodah zarah in, it sounds from the Mishnah that the bias is now usur b'hana. If they take the avodah zarah out, then that constitutes... Then the bias is restored to being mutar b'hana. So there are two comments here. One is a comment, and one is something that has to be explored. The comment is, this actually would raise profound questions, and does raise profound questions, they're not insurmountable questions, about the question of contemporary churches. Now, I'm not thinking about entering a church. I'm not thinking about entering the church to look at things. That runs into a number of obstacles. But let me present the following scenario. It's a very hot day in New York City. Okay, you're at the Israel Day Parade, let's say, and I don't know if there are any churches on Fifth Avenue, and the sun is beating down, and you know what? Maybe I'll move over into the shade in the church. And the question is, if the base of Avodah Zarah is Asur Banah, is that mutter? Is that mutter? Now, the pashtus is, although I haven't looked at the Shulchan Aruch, the good news is that's okay. But the question is why? We're going to see on the Mishnah Memchesam and Beis, if you have an Asherah tree, you're not allowed to sit in its shade. So the question is, what's the difference? But that's a question that should be raised, number one. Number two, come back to one of my favorite questions, you know, the cloisters, right? I've said many times that the cloisters are mutar b'hanah. But the question is, why are the cloisters mutar b'hanah? So in that particular case, the non-Jews, the monasteries, if they weren't ruined already, took apart pieces of monasteries. Clearly, they took it to be a museum. That constitutes a bittul. What was the status of the stones that they took out of these monasteries? At worst, assuming it was part of a chapel, part of a church, as opposed to just the monks' living quarters, so those stones would worst be tashmishi avodah zarah. Tashmishi avodah zarah require bittul. You can do bittul. And presumably, when the goyim took them out, they, in fact, were bought out. But the question is, coming to our Mishnah itself, Hichnis l'toch avodas kochavim v'hotzia hareiz emoter. What exactly, who took it out? And what exactly does this what is this hotza? In other words, I'm asking the following question. If it means, when we say, is hotza from the church bittul? Does it constitute a bittul of the avodah zarah, or at least a bittul of the building, the bayis, as tashmish avodah zarah? Or is there no bittul required at all? Now, in other words, it's just that when the avodah zarah is in there, you can't get hanah from the house. But once it's taken out, it's fine. Now, why do I present this question? The difference would be who took the avodah zarah out of the house. If it functions from the perspective of bittul, if removal of the avodah zarah from the house constitutes at least bittul with respect to the house, not necessarily the avodah zarah, but with respect to the house, then you need a goy to remove it from there, because a Jew cannot be mevat avodah zarah. If, however, removing it from the house, removing the avodah zarah from the house, is like removing the plaster from the wall, so there we pointed out that when you remove the plaster from the walls, so that bittul only needs to take place on the plaster if you want to get benefit from the plaster. But the rest of the house, because it hasn't been worshipped yet, is actually mutter. Now, looking at this, now, I'm going to ask another question. When the goy brought the avodah zarah into the house, did they worship the avodah zarah there yet? So the answer presumably has to be yes. Why? Because if they haven't, the house itself is not asur b'hanah right now. Why? Because tashmishi avodah zarah, everybody agrees, do not become prohibited in hana until the avodah zarah itself is worshipped. But if it hasn't been worshipped yet, while that which was built for to be avodah zarah might be also immediately, the tashmishim or not. So you have to assume that the avodah zarah was worshipped inside the house. If that's the case, then it would, as opposed to the plaster on the walls of the bayis, which was never yet worshipped, it would seem clear that the bayis has become tashmish avodah zarah, and there has to be bittul somehow. So again, if that's the case, then it would seem that it has to be a goy who removes it from the house.
Maybe another nafkamina, if it's a church room that uses at the church regularly, or it's a temporary service in the airport.
So take a look at Rashi, Baruch Shekivanta. Rashi writes, in the last Rashi on the Mishnah, Hichnis l'tocho avodas kochavim. First he says, Ves habayis atzmo lo niskavein la'avod. Okay, they didn't worship the house itself. And v'lo hiktsahu l'tashmish avodas kochavim, ela lafisha'a hichnis l'socha avodas kochavim. So the other Rishonim point out, Rashi seems to be assuming the following. If the guy, in fact, intended this house to be a permanent location, a permanent base of Avodah Zarah, and he brings the Avodah Zarah in, and they worship the Avodah Zarah, not the house, it is now Tashmish Avodah Zarah. And that would actually require Bittul, and the assumption is Yisrael could not do that. Rashi here is establishing a case where even the Jew could be Mevatel. Namely, if the goy brought an avodah zarah in on a temporary basis, the bayis wasn't built to be worshipped. The bayis wasn't even built to be tashmish avodah zarah. He brought the avodah zarah in to this house. They needed to rent the space for a short time. They needed a weekend. They bring the avodah zarah in. And since the bayis is not muksel avodah zarah, it's not intended as a permanent sanctuary for the avodah zarah, even though they worshipped avodah zarah when it was in the house, that's, the house is not called tashmish avodah zarah. Tashmish avodah zarah has to be something that has been designated and set aside for the purposes of for an avodah zarah on a long term basis. And since it was just a temporary usage, Rashi is assuming the house itself does not even have the status of tashmish avodah zarah. It's just some type of an isser. You're not supposed to use it while the avodah zarah is inside. Maybe it's some type of a drabanan or something like that. Tosas points out that it's very similar in some ways to an analog that we talk about tefillin. I mentioned this before. You have a tefillin bag. So if you put your tefillin in, and that's intended to be your tefillin bag, so that tefillin bag is asur b'hanah. I mean, you're allowed to use it to put the tefillin in. You're not allowed to use it for other purposes. You can't store other stuff in it or any other type of usage, because the tefillin bag is what's called tashmishe kedusha. The tefillin themselves have kedusha, they have shem Hashem, and anything that's used directly in connection with the tefillin, meaning the bag, the first bag in which it's put, so that is called tashmishe kedusha, and it's asur for all purposes other than its specific mitzvah that it's used for. But the rule is, when it comes to tefillin bag, is that if you designate a tefillin bag to be a tefillin bag, but you haven't put anything in it yet, it's still mutter. Once you put the tefillin in it once, and you had already designated it as a tefillin bag, even though you're putting it in at this time, you're not sure you're going to leave it there, it's already muktzah, it's already becomes tashmishe kedusha, and it's asar. Or, even if you didn't prepare the tefillin bag in advance, you didn't do what's called hazmana, but you decide, you put the tefillin in there now, and you say, you know what, I'm going to leave them there as this bag, it's also asar bahana, right? But, as the rule is, tsarbe velo azmane, or azmane velo tsarbe. If you put it in it once, but you're not designated permanently, or if you designated permanently, but you haven't put the tefillin in yet, so it's not yet considered tashmishe kedusha. The same thing is true, by the way, by the shrouds, or the aron for a deceased. Same, the Gemara has the exact same din there, which is if you make a coffin for someone, if you haven't put them in yet, so the coffin is mutar banar, you can do something else with it. If you put a mace into a coffin, but you don't intend it to be there permanently, once you remove the mace, you can use the coffin. In order for the asar banar, it has to be what we would say, tsar beva asmane, that you put it in there for a permanent basis, or you had already made it for this purpose, and even when you put it in the mace on a temporary basis, then it will immediately become asar banar. So the same thing Rashi seems to be applying here, which is you have a bayis that was made to be permanent for avodah zarah. As soon as you machnas avodah zarah inside and you worship it, it's asar bahana, and requires vittel. But if it wasn't made for that purpose and you put it in here only temporarily, so then it's not, the bayis itself is not tashmish avodah zarah. So there may be an issur of using the bayis while the avodah zarah is in there, but once anybody takes the avodah zarah out of the bayis reverts to its regular status and is mutter. Okay, so that's yes, Josh.
Did you batel it when you switched tefillin bag?
No, there's no bittel lagabe tashmish kedusha. What you do with your tefillin bag, if it's worn out or you can't use it anymore, you don't want to use it anymore, is you put it in shemos. That's what it's nignas, you know. Okay. The same thing is true. Sometimes people don't realize if your tefillin strap, if something gets, you know, a piece gets lopped off, you know, let's say sometimes at the end, you've been wearing it long enough, and the end is frayed, a little piece comes off, that belongs in shemos, because that's tashmishe kedusha. Okay.
And if it's too long, you cut it before you use it, you're okay?
So I think, I don't remember, I assume that's specifically spoken about, but I think the answer is probably, if it's clear at the outset that was too long and the intent was to trim it when you put it on, then the answer is yes, it's mutter. I believe so. Yeah. Okay. So now the Gemara. I've already been reading the Mishnah with the Gemara, which maybe isn't fair, but it's a little simpler that way. Amar Rav, Hamishtachav lebayis asara. If a person bows to the bayis, he makes it asar. Now this is not even necessarily talking about our Mishnah. Here's a house. I own it. I didn't build a house for Avodah Zarah. If a person is a person who owns the house is a mishtachav and says, Eliyata, you're my God, it is asar b'hana. Now, what is the Chiddush of Rav's statement? So the Gemara says, Alma kasavar talush ulebesov chibro kitalush dami. If you remember, we spent a lot of time talking about trees, right? A tree that you plant, we assume is really considered mechubar lakarka, right? And the way certainly Tosos read everybody, if you plant a seed, once it takes root, so that is considered mechubar lakarka. Even though the seed was once detached from the ground, even though it was talush, that's a real chibur. But that's because a seed takes root and becomes part of the ground. But when you take a stone and you put it in the ground as the foundation of the house, the stone does not become part of the ground. That's what Rav says. Talush ulamisof chibro, just because you glue it in really well, does not make it part of the karka. Okay. Therefore, so usually that's a chumrah, by the way, as we've seen in all of our scenarios, right? Because we've always seen that something is asr bahanah, if once it's detached from the ground, it can become asr bahanah. There's at least one case where being talush is actually a kula, which is that if you're not allowed to do shechita on an animal with something that's mechubar lakarka. So if you took, let's say, a reed, a very sharp reed, let's say a bamboo, or something like that, and you stuck it into the ground, and then you took the chicken and you moved it back and forth against that, so at least alpi din Torah, it should be kosher, because that knife, that blade, you don't need a knife, it has to be any sharp edge, is actually considered talush. But in most cases, in our context, saying that something is considered detached from the ground is a chumrah, because it means that if you worship it, it can become asur bahana. So Rav says that a mishnah of the bayis is asara amakasavar talush l'besov chibro ketalush dami. So then Gemara immediately asks, one second, V'anan b'na'otanan. In our Mishnah, the Mishnah suggests that it's only Asur, because it was built that way. But if it were not built for Avodah Zarah, and then the assumption of the Gemara's question is that when the Mishnah says Ba'isha b'no b'tchila l'kach, it means you built it for those purposes and you worshipped it. The way the Gemara was reading in its question is case number one of the Mishnah is you build a house for Avodah Zarah purposes and you worship it, now it's asur b'no, the entire house requires bittul. The second case, the way the Gemara initially read it was, you build the house, not for Avodah Zarah purposes, that house cannot be nesar, you know why? Because it's mechubar, not like Rav. Now you add on some plaster for the purposes of Avodah Zarah, and now you worship the house. And what's the din? Well, the plaster becomes Asur Bahanah, because it was put there, L'shem Avodah Zarah. But the house remains Mutar Bahanah. That was the Gemara's assumption originally. Rav comes along and says that as soon as you have a house, it wasn't built for Avodah Zarah purposes, you mishtachav etz Asur. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? The Mishnah says, Bina'o. Right? It has to be Bina'o, and the assumption is you worshipped it. So the Gemara says, now, Bina'o, afal pi shelo hishtachavalo, hishtachava, afal pi shelo bina'o. Rav is assuming that the Mishnah believes that when a goy or a Jew, that the Gemara will discuss, makes an avodah zarah, it immediately becomes asur bahanah. We saw this machlokas a couple of dapim ago about with the guy who stands up the brick or the egg and bows to it. In that discussion, when something becomes asur bahanah, when it's worshipped or as soon as it's made as avodah zarah. So Rav is assuming that if you make something as avodah zarah, it's immediately asur bahanah. You don't have to. It's not on hold until you actually worship it. As opposed to the Gemara in the first parak that said tashmish avodah zarah only become asur. The accoutrements of the avodah zarah only become asur when you actually worship the avodah zarah. So Rav here is assuming as soon as you make it as avodah zarah, it's asur. So when the Mishnah says ba'yish b'na'o mitchila avodah zarah, it doesn't mean that and you worshipped it. It means you just built it for those purposes. And Rav, by making his comment, is pointing out that the Mishnah is when you just build it and you don't do anything with it. And now Rav says, but if I have a house that I didn't do anything to, it's just there. The house as is was built for living purposes. And now I'm mishtachav, I buy the house and I'm mishtachav to it. Rav says that also makes it asur bahanah. Why? Because it's no different than my bowing down to my glasses or my watch. These are talush min hakarka. If I bow to them, they become asur bahanah. That's Rav's position. So now,
how does he take the second case in the Mishnah? Why wouldn't the whole house at that point?
Because you didn't worship it yet.
Ah,
in other words, the whole point is that the renovations...
The second he worships it, the whole thing.
Everything, correct. The entire house becomes Asur. The reason why the Mishnah says that only the renovations are Asur now, and if you ruin that's okay, is because you didn't worship it.
Right?
Just as in the first case of the Mishnah, as soon as you build a house without worshipping it, that becomes Asur Bahanah. So when you renovate the house without worshipping it, the renovations become Asur Bahanah. Okay. Right, that's why I was pointing out when we read the Mishnah that the third case is an outlier. Hichnis l'toch avodah zarah, it has to be that you actually worshipped the Avodah Zarah. Because if you didn't worship the Avodah Zarah, so the Avodah Zarah itself is also, but the bias is only also on the grounds of being a Tashmish Avodah Zarah, and everybody agrees that Tashmish Avodah Zarah are only Asurim once you have actually worshipped the Avodah Zarah itself. Then the Tashmishim become prohibited. So Rav, in effect, is almost disjoining the Mishnah. Right, because now the first two cases are situations where you didn't worship it. The third case has to be a case where you worshipped it. Okay, so now the Gemara says, "But ihachi, hani shlosha, arba havu." There are actually four different kinds of houses, right? There's the bias which you just there's a bias you can put it wherever you want. There's the bias that you built the shem of the Zohar, didn't worship it. There's a bias that you didn't build the shem of the Zohar, you renovate the shem of the Zohar, and you didn't worship it. There's the bias you didn't do anything to, but you worshipped it. And then there's the bias which you don't worship the bias, but you bring an avodah zarah in. So there are really four different kinds of batim. So the Gemara says the answer is that kevan d'le'inyan bitul tsanan ba bona b'shtachava chad kachashiv lei. We're talking about bittul. The whole purpose of this mission to discuss is how, in effect, do you get rid of the shem avodah zarah. So, whether or not, how do you get rid? The Mishnah didn't spell it out. Sam's question was a fair question. It's a good question on the Gemara here. The Gemara never said how you mevatel the first case, the bias which you build the shem avodah zarah. The assumption is the guy has to be mevatel, right? There's nothing you can do about it. So the first case was a bias which you built the shem avodah zarah, didn't worship it. What do you do to that? The guy has to be mevatel. You have to mevatel the avodah zarah. A bias which you renovated, but you didn't worship, so the renovations have to be removed, and that's enough. And a bias, which is not itself worship, but you brought an Avodah Zarah and you worshipped it, you have to remove the Avodah Zarah from the bias. Whoever has to do that. And what about a bias which you worshipped? Bias which wasn't B'tol HaShem Azar, but you worshipped it, how do you get rid of that? Same as the first one, the guy has to be Mevatel. So the Gemara says, you're right, there are four different kinds of houses in terms of how they got to where they got, except that the three modes of bittul. One is the guy has to be mevatel, the bias, the bittul, the avodah zarah outright. Two is you have to remove the renovations. And three, you just take the idol out of the house and then you're okay. So that's why the Mishnah only lists three kinds of batim, because it's taught with respect to bittul. That's how Rashi knew to write on the first line of the Mishnah, which we read, Shlosha batim inyan bittul avodas kochavim. Rashi is already sort of telegraphing what the Gemara's conclusion is going to be. It's not something, by the way, that I think that Rashi typically tends to do. Rashi, the Tosfos Yontif points, there are the two standard commentaries on the Mishnah. If you pull out the Yochanan Boaz, Marshall's holding one, or was holding one before. You still holding that Mishnah, Marshall? You put it on the shelf there. So if you look in the Mishnah, you'll see there are two major commentaries, which was the Rav Avadya Mibartanura, 16th century, Italy, and the Tosfos Yontif, Rav Yom Tov Lipman Heller, I think he was in Vienna or Prague sometime in the 17th century or something like that. So the Rav, in his commentary, draws heavily upon the Rambam's Perush and on Rashi and the Gemara. Tosfos Yontif frequently criticizes the Rav in that the Rav will quote Rashi from the Mishnah, and Rashi is only explaining the Mishnah without the Gemara's conclusion. So Tosfos Yontif says in a number of places, it's okay for Rashi to do that because Rashi, as a commentator, first explains the Mishnah as is because he's going to explain the Gemara as well and the Gemara's conclusion. But you, the Rav, are writing a commentary in the Mishnah. Your job is to write based upon the conclusion of what the Gemara says the Mishnah actually means. So when you quote Rashi's commentary, you're ignoring the fact that in effect is only the Havamina, not the conclusion. So typically speaking, what that does tell you, which you would have known, you know anyway if you learn enough Rashi, is that Rashi when he's explaining the Mishnah, very frequently does not follow the Gemara's interpretation. Sometimes he tells you the Gemara Mefarishla. Very often Rashi will explain what might be the Havamin of the Gemara, and it takes the Gemara to turn around and undo it. If you look, by the way, any of you might be doing Daf Yomi or occasionally doing Daf Yomi, as you do Rashbam, his grandson, who is one of the Baalei Tosfos, Rashbam is not at all like that. Rashbam can't control himself. He always has to spill the beans. He's got to tell you in advance where the Gemara is going to go with it. But Rashi teaches you patience.
What would the Bartanura answer if he was around?
I don't know. You know,
does he bring it down? Does he explain why he does it this way?
I'm not familiar with that, you know, with the answer. I mean, you know, the answer is he's drawing heavily upon Rashi, and so he's content with that. I don't know. It's a better, you know, the truth is if the Rav were interested is a general enterprise. Is it an appropriate enterprise to engage in the study of Mishnah, the Pshuto Shel Mishnah, as opposed to the Gemara's explanation of it? There's a literature about this. Now, I think it is perfectly fine as long as you recognize that that is not how we rule halacha, but you understand that might be a pshat in the Mishnah, and the Gemara interprets otherwise for other reasons. If the Rav had been a pashtun of the Mishnah, so then that would be the answer to the question. The problem is that he's not, right? The Rav is always concerned because he's citing the Rambam, what halacha is. He'll always write in the Mishnah if there's a machlokas, v'halacha, you know, ein halacha k'rabbi Shimon, halacha k'chacham, or something like that. I don't know why he does that. And understand for Rashi himself, Rashi, methodologically speaking, I don't think I mentioned this in a while, there are sort of two schools of thought within Rishonim as to how to interpret Gemara, how to read Shas. There is this school of thought that the Gaonim and the Rif and the Rambam belong to, as does Rashi, and in his own way, which is that when you have two passages of the Gemara that contradict one another, you don't try to resolve the two. Not never, but you often don't try to resolve the two. You assume it's a machlokas between two sugyos, between two unnamed editors of different sugyos, and that's the way it is. And when you want to paskin, you have to figure out which sugya do you paskin like. That was the hallmark of the Gaonim and the Rif and the Rambam. Right? It is very frequent that you find the Rambam or the Rif even omits a din, and you're wondering, why did the Rif omit this din? Why did the Rambam omit this din? Why did the Rambam paskin against this particular sugya? The answer often given later by the Rishonim and sometimes later by the Achronim is that the Rif or the Rambam perceived the contradiction between two sugyas, and that's why they either left out one sugya or paskin against that sugya and you're surprised because you don't realize there's another sugya which is contradicting it. That was the method of early Chachmei Svarad and Rashi, at least as a parshan on the Gemara. When you talk about Rashi, Achronim spend a lot of time, Rashi contradicts himself between two sugyos in Shas. The answer to the question, sometimes it is a contradiction, but very often the answer to the question is that Rashi's not contradicting himself. Rashi's just explaining each Gemara, and he explains each Gemara, each sugya, according to its pshat, and so the sugyos are contradicting one another. The revolution that took place, and again, it's not yesh me'ayin, but nonetheless, it is certainly a significant revolution, and some scholars would actually like to suggest that there's a little bit of Christian influence here as well. Not that the Christians were studying Gemara, but the Christian methodology to dealing with, I guess, I don't know if in canon law or things like this, what they'll call the dialectic method, the Balei HaTosfos come along, and they almost never saw two contradictory sugyos that they couldn't resolve. By explaining that one sugya is dealing with this type of a case and the other sugya is dealing with a different kind of a case, even though the Gemara doesn't really make that distinction, that was the hallmark of the Balei HaTosfos. Eventually, this method became so popular that it even overwhelmed later Spanish Rishonim. So the Ramban already has very much taken in the Ramban, and later his Talmud, the Rashba, and later the Ritva. They've all sort of absorbed this method, and they go down the path of the Balei HaTosfos. But Rashi himself, at least in his as a parshan on the Gemara, that doesn't seem to interest him. And it's no different, Rashi between two Gemaras, and Rashi on the Mishnah versus the way the Gemara will eventually explain the Mishnah. So in this case, though, Rashi is a little bit of an outlier. Rashi already sort of telegraphs where the Gemara is going to go with this, that the Shlosh Abatim are le'inyan bitl. Okay. Anyway. Fine. Mm-hmm. So that was the first of the three.
So is building a house and worshipping a house separately, are they the same in all respects?
No, because if you build a house, l'shem avodah zarah, you're not chayav misa. If you worship a house, even if you didn't build l'shem avodah zarah, you're chayav misa. In other words, the status of the house is the same, but they're not considered the same act. Right? Making an avodah zarah is an issur lo sase. Worshipping avodah zarah is a capital crime. But in terms of the houses themselves, their status, once you're done, either you built l'shem avodah zarah or you just worshipped it, even though it wasn't built l'shem avodah zarah, the status of the house at this point is the same. Legabe bitul, they have the same din. That's why the Gemara says those two count as one. That's why it's only shalosh batim. Okay. Shalosh avanim heim. There are three kinds of stones. Now, even shechatzava mitchila lebimus. If they initially hewed, which could either mean extracting from the mountain, it could mean cutting it, even once it's been removed. They do that, the shame as a bimus, to be worshipped, harei zo asura. So that stone is asur. Did you worship the stone yet? According to Rav, presumably no. Fine. Next, siyada v'chira l'shem avodas kochavim. You decorate the stone. You renovate the stone, right? You put plaster on it. You draw little stick figures on it or caveman on it, whatever it is. And that's done l'shem avodah zarah. But you haven't, let's assume, according to you haven't worshipped the stone yet. So, no tel masha siyed v'chiyer. All you have to do is remove the renovations.
Umuteras.
Finally, hemin aleh avodas kochavim v'silka hareza umuteras. If you put an avodah zarah, you finally put the Aphrodites on top of it. Okay, and now, and let's assume you worship it, the Aphrodites, not the stone itself. Now, until you remove Aphrodites, it's asurbana. Once you remove Aphrodites, the stone is mutter.
Mm-hmm. In trying to maintain the parallelism between the first case of both Mishnayot, which seems to suggest that the actual thing is, like, it's, the atzmo is of a, like, was intentionally made for avodah zarah, and therefore is also off the bat.
Right.
Why do we say that it's a stone that was hewn for the bimus, not just a stone that was hewn for avodah zarah itself?
Because you want to get
why that intermediary.
So the answer is because you want to get to the last case where they don't actually worship the stone. Right. In other words, the whole point is to get to that last case where the stone itself isn't worshipped. But if it's the avodah zarah itself, that's meaningless, right? If it was the idol itself, it's only worshipped, right? That's its purpose. So you're right. The first case did not have to be. The din is the same whether you worship the stone or if you made the stone as the idol. But you won't get the Mishnah won't be able to construct the third case, and it wants everything to be parallel. Okay. Amar Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Ami, so I'm going to tell you what Rabbi Ami actually said. And the Gemara is going to say, V'husha siyed b'chiyed b'gufa shalevin. Rabbi Ami said something about the second case of the Mishnah. That's obvious. He said something about the second case of the Mishnah, and he said something about the siyed b'chiyed has to be b'gufa shalevin. What exactly he said, the Gemara presents one way, and then is going to change. We'll see that in a second. But firstly, What did he mean by gufa shalevin? So there are two ways to renovate a stone. One way is to take plaster, cover the stone, maybe draw some things in the plaster. That's one way. The other way is not to add plaster, but to take the stone and start to chisel into it, right? To make images in the stone itself. That's the gufa shalevin. Now, is there a difference between these two? One could have very well constructed a difference, and what would you have said?
You can't remove.
You have to chisel the whole stone.
So Tosfos says basically you have to take out a chunk. You would think it's worse when you do it begufa shelevin. Right? Whatever the din is, it's going to be as bad or worse if you do it begufa shelevin, and it's going to be as good or better if you don't do it begufa shelevin. In the converse, now the way it's presented here is Amar Rav Ami v'hu shasiyed v'chiyed begufa shelevin. So what does that mean then? It means he's talking about one of the cases of the Mishnah, which is obviously the second. The Mishnah said that siyed v'chiyed, then no tell masha siyed v'chiyed and hareza muteres. But it's mashma that if you didn't remove the siyed v'chiyud, then right now it's aser. So Rav Ami's statement that's presented initially is that v'hu, the din, that it's aser, is only Shasiyed v'chiyed begufa shalevin. But if it had been chutz li'evin, just plaster on top of it, what would the din be? It would seem that the din should be that it's a mutter even before you remove the plaster. Right? In other words, let's say I have a stone, and I want to use the stone to put stuff in. It's got like holes on one side, and I want to store precious stones in there or money in there. And the other side, they had stuck plaster, l'avodah zarah. So Rabbi Ami would say, even before they remove the plaster, you can stick your stuff in the stones for safekeeping. Why? Because they weren't mesayid and mechayid begufa sholev.
What's the difference of the house?
Ah, so read the next line. So the Gemara says, v'hadum yedabayis tanan, u'bayis lab begufehu. The Gemara says, one second, the Mishnah should be analogous. And the bias, the bias, the siyed v'chiyed, now, of course, the assumption is that you wouldn't ever do that in the walls of the house. I mean, you could have engraved in the walls of the house, but the assumption is, in the house, you wouldn't do that. There's no hollows in the house that you're going to, holes that you're going to dig in. So the Gemara says, v'adum yed bayis tanan, u'bayis la begufehu, and nonetheless u'mitzar. It still becomes aser, even though the siyud v'chiyur is only on the surface, not inside, not into the object itself. So the Gemara says, no, bayis nami ika bene orve. So the Gemara says, no. Bais has beinei orve, which means literally between the rows of bricks. It means when you build a house, there are holes in there. So you could have, and this is interesting, because it's not the way I would have understood, but you could have put them in the, sort of, in the niches. Now, the truth be told, the siyud v'chiyur. Now, the truth is, I would have said, but that's not begufo shabayis. Right. That's just in the empty space. So it sounds from the Gemara, the issue is not so much, it really is an airspace question, right? It's not so much that you're modifying the bayis or modifying the stone, is that it is in the physical airspace of the stone, and that's what Rav Ami thought made it worse. So at this point, the Gemara says, a bayis also has sort of indentations that you could use to put stuff in. In which case, it is dumya de bayis. So Rav Ami's statement could stand. So now the Gemara says, what are you talking about? The Gemara says, bayis nam amilo askinan deshaya v'hadar shiyeh. Who says that when the Gemara says siyud v'chiyur, that would only be when it was bene orve? Firstly, the bayis could be a standard bayis where after you put the bricks in, you put a layer of plaster on top so the walls are not smooth. And in that case, there's no place to put the new plaster, the shame of the Zara, except for on top of the surface. In other words, the Mishnah is taught by any stam bayis. Any stam bayis, some might have cracks, some might not have cracks. And the Mishnah doesn't assume that there's a distinction between those two kinds of houses when you do siyud v'chiyur. Siyud v'chiyur is whether or not it does have cracks or it doesn't have cracks. So you have to assume dumya de bayis, and by bayis it doesn't have to be begufa shel bayis, because there are some batim which don't have a guf to do it in, and they're still asur b'hana once you put the decorations on. So the stone also, it shouldn't have to be begufa shel even. So now the Gemara turns around and says, okay, we got Rav Ami's statement wrong. We misunderstood it. Rav Ami said something about gufa shel even with respect to the second line of the Mishnah, but we got it backwards. He says, Ela ki itmar de Rabbi Ami l'inyan bitul itmar. He said it not with respect to the Isser Hana, but rather with respect to the Bittel. Namely, V'af al gav the siyed v'chiyed begufa shel even, ki natal mashachidesh shapir dami. Rav Ami said that not only if you just put plaster on top of the wall, is it also, on top of the stone, is it asr, but even if you put it inside the stone, you put it in the cracks and the crevices, and then you remove it, it's still mutar b'hana at that point. Mdimahu detema kevan shesiyei dechiyei begufa shal even keevan shechatzava mitchila tzkochavim damya v'titzar kula. You might have thought that once you do it begufa shal even, that is as if you had used the stone in the first place. L'shem avodah zarah kamash malan. That even though you put it inside the space, the airspace of the even, since at the end of the day when you hewed that stone, it wasn't l'shem avodah zarah. Once you remove whatever you added, whether it's on the surface, whether it's inside, once you remove it, that constitutes a bittul. Larry, your question? Okay.
Why do they spend so much time to try to find that etzer? Why do they try in avodah zarah? You don't find anything else. That they make such minute distinctions.
So there are two possibilities. I'm going to argue the more likely possibility is that the interest here is not a practical interest, it's a conceptual interest. And the points that are made, in other words, I don't know how much of a kula this actually is. Right? In other words, I think conceptually he's trying to explore what does it mean to be chotzev in even mitchila lakach. And by doing so, he's sort of clarifying what that boundary actually is. I don't imagine it was so lemaisa. If it was lemaisa, the answer will be is that in the same way that the Balei Atosus are very lenient when it comes to doing business with non-Jews because of the potential for economic loss, so the same consideration here as well is as well. You know, there's a machlokas.
You have to live in a society. That's what my feeling, and not only this mission, the mission before it also. The Shlosh Shabbat.
Yes. Yes.
Same.
I think so. There's always a balance in halacha. You know, the machlokas Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon about a particular issue of a treifa. I think it's Rabbi Akiva Tarfon. One says to the other, Ad masai ata machel nevelas utreifos li Yisrael. And the other one said, Ad masai ata machel lemamonim shay Yisrael. Right? There's always a balance. There's no such thing. Being machmir on food and asamir is not just a chumrah. It's a kula also because you're being mafsin mamon shay Yisrael. So that has to be a consideration. So, yeah. Okay, so that is, now we've done houses, we've done stones, and now it's time to go back to nature and do trees. Shalosh asheros hay. There are three kinds of trees, and I imagine if I left you to your own wits, you might even be able to construct the Mishnah without seeing it. Almost. Ilan shenita'o mitchila l'shem avodas kochavim. A tree that was planted initially for avodas zara. Harezo asura. Right? It's asura. Even if it hasn't been worshipped yet. Rashi writes, I don't know why, Rashi writes like he does in the earlier Mishnayis. Achi avatlenu ha'akum. Okay, Rashi said that at least on the first Mishnah, he provided a more expansive explanation. Either the goy is mevatalit, if it was made by a goy. If it's made by a Jew, Rashi says asa. So here he just says, Achi vatlenu ovet kochavim. Fine. Number two, Gido upislo, l'shem avodas kochavim. So he trims the tree because he wants it to grow back more, and his kavana is that the gidulim will be l'shem avodah zarah, that which grows. Again, he hasn't worshipped it yet. Rashi writes, Gid'o, oveit kochavim, o Yisrael, avodas kochavim, l'tzorach avodas kochavim, la'avod ha'gidulim, she'igadlu ba'me'ata, v'hu kvar ha'yenatua, k'sheba Yisrael le'hanos mimenu. Right, so the intention is to worship probably the tree and the new growth, but it was already planted. The Mishnah says the hechlif and it grew. No tomasha hechlif, that which grows anew. So that's like the plaster you put on. Okay, you cut that off, and then the rest is mutter. And again, if it was a Jew who was gido v'pislo, that which you take off is going to be aser forever. Whereas if it's a guy who made it, so then a guy can be mevatel. And finally, hemid tachta avodas kochavim unatala, harezo muteres. If they just put an avodah zara underneath it, and then they remove it, then it is muteres. It sounds like it is very much identical to the first cases. What? Now, there is, however, a machlokas. If you look at the next Mishnah at the bottom of the page, Ezo Asherah, what is an Asherah tree? Kol she'yesh tachta avodas kochavim. Rabbi Shimon Omer, kol she'ovden osa. Only if they worship the tree itself. Umasa b'tzidon b'ilan shahayu ovden osa. There was a story in the city of Tzidon, in Lebanon, that with a tree that they used to worship, umatsu tachtav gal. They didn't actually know that they worshipped the tree. The rumors are they worshipped, that's an Asherah tree. They didn't know why. And they found a pile of stones underneath. Amar lehem Rabbi Shimon, bitku es agal hazeh. Inspect it. Ubadkuha, ubidakuhu, Marshall, ubidakuhu, umatsu bot surah. And they found that Avodah Zarah, an image. Amar lahen, ho lo tzura hin ovdim, natir es ha'ilan. Rabbi Shimon said that when Nashera is only a tree that's worshipped, if you put an Avodah Zarah underneath it, not a problem. Now, ask yourself. Now the Gemara asked, what do you mean? It means, then how could you say, in the previous Mishnah, there are three Asheras? So the Gemara says, no, there are two Asheras that everybody agrees are Asheras, and one which is a Machlokas. Now, let me ask you a question. What is the difference between Rabbi Shimon's position and the Chachamim's, in this Mishnah and in the previous two Mishnayos? I assume that Rabbi Shimon doesn't disagree by the bias or by the Evan. Otherwise, he would have said something. Now, the truth is, there's a Mishnah at the beginning of the second parak in Yevamos. I don't want to go into what the issue is. There's some particular din in the laws of Yibum, and there are two different scenarios, one of which is a bigger chiddush than the other. And the Tanakhama presents his position by case A and case B, and then Rabbi Shimon disagrees. And the question is, does Rabbi Shimon disagree by case B only, or does he disagree by both cases? And one possibility is that it's a machlokas amoraim, whether Rabbi Shimon argued on both. But the way the Gemara presents it, if he argued on both, is the Chachamah and Rabbi Shimon let the Chachamish finish saying what they were saying. And then he chimed in. The way I would say it, he had their heretz. He let them finish saying what they were saying. He didn't jump into their argument. They presented their cases. And then Rabbi Shimon comes along and disagrees. Not because he didn't disagree with the first one. What he presented is presumably applicable to both. So here, it could be, you could say, Rabbi Shimon disagreed in all three Mishnayos, but he waited till the end. And it's understood that Asherah and the other two as well. I doubt it. If in fact, I'm correct, I think the Rishonim assume the way I'm assuming. I'm assuming the way the Rishonim are assuming. So what is the distinction between the Asherah tree versus the Bias and the Evan?
The Karka.
So Tosfos don't know if he says it explicitly with respect to this. With respect to a different question within our sugya, the Tosus here on Mem Chasam Aleph, Tosus says the difference is that the Ilan is Mechubar Lekarka. And even in other words, even if you planted that tree, now you, just like for previous two Mishnayos, you built the house Shalol L'Shem Avodah Zarah. So it's now Mechubar Lekarka, but we say Talosh Shel Besof Chibro is Talosh. So here, you planted a tree, not L'Shem Avodah Zarah. But here, once the tree takes root in the ground, that is Mechubar Lekarka. And therefore, I think Tosus suggests somewhere, in one of these Tosusim, that even according to the Chachamim, the Isser here is only Nisid the Rabbanon. I think Tosfos... Tosus on it's on the wrong Amud. Two Tosus from our Amud that are on the previous Amud on Mem Zayin Amud Beis, the fourth Tosus from the bottom. Redibar Maskel Hachi Garcinan Hamid Natachtav Avodas Kochavim Unitala Harezel Muteres. So Tosus said is bothered by something. He says Afal Gav Dechilo Bitla Unitala Nami Lo Havim Mishamshin. Even though the tree does not have the status of Tashmish Avodah Zarah, before they take the Avodah Zarah away, the Haliba the Rabbanon come up meaning La Gemara Damrid on Ilan Shanatol B'Sof Avodah Mutar. So what's the Gemara is on our sugi is going to say we're working with the Chacham and not Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Huda. Remember we had a machlokas the Chacham Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Huda. If you plant a tree, if you're notea on Ilan. Not L'Shem Avodah Zarah, but then you worship, it doesn't become Asur. The Chachamim said, no. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda said that since this Tfisas Yad Adam, it does become Asur. So the Gemara on our sugya that we're about to read is going to say the Mishnah is following the sheet of the Chachamim. According to the Chachamim, if you plant it, presumably by the tree on which you put an Asherah, when you put an Avodah Zarah underneath it, so you didn't plant the tree L'Shem Avodah Zarah. So what happens if you bow down to that tree? What's the din of the tree?
It's fine.
Ilan, according to Chacham, Ilan Shenital Safa, that was Mutar Bana. It's not Nesar. If it doesn't become Avodah Zarah, it doesn't become Tashmish Avodah Zarah either. Why should that be any worse? So Tosa says, the Afal Gav Nechilo Bitla Nami Yelo Havim Mishamshim, the Aliba the Rabbanon come up Mina Lamigmar, Dam Ridon, Ilan Shenital Besof of Adamotar, Vahacha Mistama, Lo Nata Mitchid Lakach, Mindelo Mefarshala Shenital Mitchid Lakach. The Mishnah doesn't say when you have the idol underneath it that you planted the tree, the shame of the Zara. Tosa says, Mikomakom, Kozman Shalom Betela, Batla, Isura de Rabbanon Ika. There's still an Issa de Rabbanon on the tree. Shebishar Sha Avodas Kochavim Nires Tachteha, Nire Keilo Netua Mitchila Lakach. In other words, the only way Tosa says the tree could have been Asur is Tashmish Avodah Zarah in that case, the way the bias is, where you don't worship the bias, where you put the Avodah Zarah and you worship it, or the way that the Bimus is, when you don't worship the Bimus but you worship the Zarah, the only way that the tree could have been Asur is Tashmish Avodah Zarah in the same way, is had the tree been planted L'Shem Tashmish Avodah Zarah. But since the Mishnah doesn't say it was, Mistama it wasn't, and yet the Mishnah still says the tree is Asur until you mevatel, until you remove the Avodah Zarah. So why is that? Tosa says it's only Nisad Rabbanon. Right? Tosa would not have said that by the first two cases. Why? Because if you bow to the stone or you bow to the house, it becomes Asur Bana. And therefore, it can also become Tashmishi Avodah Zarah like that. And therefore, the third Mishnah is actually fundamentally different than the first two Mishnahs, certainly with respect to the last case. That would also explain why, that according to Tosus doesn't spell this out, but it would seem that the Machlokas Rabbi Shimon the Chachamim might very well be whether or not there's an Issa d'Rabbanon on such a tree. The Chachamim say it's the Mishnah, Tanakama. The first Mishnah says it's Aser. Why? Because there's Xerim in the Rabbanim, because it looks like you had planted the tree to use it as shade for the Avodah Zarah, even though you didn't. Rabbi Shimon says we don't assume that when they, you know, if there's an Avodah Zarah underneath the tree, we assume that the Avodah Zarah is what is served, worshipped. The tree is not worshipped, and we are not concerned about Tashmishe Avodah Zarah. Okay, let's just read the first few lines of the Gemara, which is somewhat parallel to a previous Gemara, to Rabbi Yami. Amri debei Rav Yanai. Rav Yanai said, V'hu shehivrich v'hirkiv begufo shel ilan. Now this may sound a little familiar. Sounds a little like Rabbi Yami's statement, but now talking about a tree. Now what does to be mavrich and what does to be markiv? So mavrich means you take a branch, a shoot, from a tree, and you sort of pull it down, you bring it into the ground, cover it with dirt, and you bring it up in another place, and it looks like you have another tree there. Okay? That seems to have been a common... I know nothing about arboreal agriculture. You can see numerous Mishnayos in many halachic contexts, in Orla, in Bikurim, where this concept of Havracha is spoken about. That's the way the Bishonim explain it. I assume they know what they were talking about, because they probably knew a lot more about arboreal agriculture than I do. I have a fruit tree in my backyard from which the squirrels seem to eat the apples every year. So I've seen very few, but I just took it from the... I just bought it at the nursery, 10 years ago, stuck it with its clump of dirt in the ground, and basically left it there, and somehow it grew. So I don't know anything about Havracha, Harkava, anything like that. So that's Havracha, that's Hivrech. Hirkiv is grafting. My understanding of grafting, but I'm not even so sure, is that you take, you have a tree, you probably cut a little piece off, you expose it, you take the branch of another tree, you sort of tie them together, and you let them sort of grow together, bond, and that has an effect on the fruit. That I understand it's done. Trees that don't produce edible fruits or don't produce fruit, so you graft and you can do that. Interestingly enough, by the way, Harkava, of two trees that are not the same species, is Asur Midoraisa in Chutz Laretz. Even though it looks like an agricultural mitzvah, it is analogized to Harkavas Behema, to crossbreeding two animals, different species, Harkavas Eilon, Harkavas Behema, that is Asur Midoraisa in Chutz Laretz. Planting two seeds together, if it doesn't involve the grapevine, is Mutun Chutz Laretz. That Kilayim, Kilayis Ram, as we call it, is Mutun Chutz Laretz. Kilaya Kerem, where it involves grape seeds, is Asur Midoraban Chutz Laretz, but Harkavas Eilon is an Isur Daraisa if it's two different species.
Only
no, it actually. So of course it's usher. In other words, the chiddush is that even though it's an agricultural mitzvah, it doesn't mean the fruit is usher. But doing, in other words, the fruit may be mutter once it's been done, but it's usher to do it. Okay, fine.
Weird usher. Why? What was the context of the Torah was talking about?
Well, Chazal understand that Harkavas Ha'ilan is somehow the equivalent of Harkavas Behema. And because Harkavas Behema is not mitzvah tuli baritz, it's not agricultural, Harkavas Behema applies bein baritz, bein b'chutz laritz, and therefore, and they made an analogy between Harkavas Ha'ilan and Harkavas Behema.
Two different species.
Even with two different species, right. Now, if it's the same species, but one is a better tree than the other, that's mutter. That's a given.
Even if it's further toughen the fruit or whatever, so it can go in different climates and feed people. I mean, there's reasons why you would do that.
I understand. There's reasons why you would plant Kalayim Zoram. Also, the Torah prohibits it. It happens.
You're just not allowed to do it.
Just not allowed to do it. Okay. It's like planting Kalayim, right? You plant Kalayim, presumably because you plant an apple and an orange, and you get an or apple or something like that, and it tastes different. I don't know.
Genetically engineered.
I don't know such things. So, all right. So now the Gemara says, one second. You're telling me. So Rav Yanai was obviously stating that when in order for the tree, in order for the new growth to become usher, it has to be hivrach v'herkiv. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? V'hanan gideo pislo tanan. You don't have to do havrach and harkava. You could do a small amount. You shave off the thing. You prune it, right? And that's enough. So the Gemara says, no. Ela ki itmar de Rabbi Yanai l'inyan bital itmar, the exact same answer. Rabbi Yanai wasn't limiting the iser, but rather he was expanding how it becomes mutter. And he was stating that the afal gav the hivrich v'hirkav of gushal ilan, even though you did a major renovation to the ilan, ki notal masha heklif shaper dami, if you remove whatever you grafted, whatever you were markiv, then it's mutter. Ma demahu detema kevan the hivrich v'hirkav of gushal ilan ki ilan shenetchila kach dami velitzar kula kamashalon. You would have thought that that's like you planted the tree in the first place, lavo dezara, and in that case, removing what you added is not sufficient. You need bittel on the entire thing. Kamash Malan, that it doesn't matter how extensive your renovations are on the tree, you have to remove everything that you've renovated, Bein Rav Limat, but once you remove everything you've renovated, Bein Rav Limat, then the tree becomes Mutar Bahana again. Okay. Any questions about that?
What's our understanding of that Ma'od Kema? Why would we ever have the Havamina of that? Because you somehow modify it to a certain degree, it's from the outset as if you planted it for the sake of Mozara.
So I would say, so I'll tell you why I think in this case. I can't explain it as easily in the previous Mishnah. I can't explain it. This I can explain, which is there is a lot of halachic discussion about the status of a tree. When you do Havracha and Harkava, what is the status of that tree, let's say, with respect to Orla? Both in terms of what grows from it, and what if the original tree dies and that new branch is alive? And like on one tree, obviously, if one, half the tree dies but half the tree is intact, that's clear. We don't say that it's a new tree and the Arla clock recounts. But what happens in what happens is this a separate tree? And if it's a separate tree and now it's a tree b'fnei atzmo and it's connected to the other tree, maybe now that there's one tree that's really the shem of Avodah Zarah, the entire everything that's interconnected becomes aser. That's what I suspect. I can more easily explain this. It's harder to explain, in that case. I suspect, which is maybe why my explanation is wrong here. There may be some broader type of explanation, along the lines of just as shinui changes an object and it's panim chadasha, this is probably more likely. When we make a shinui in an object, so panim, we say panim chadasha is ba'olakan, and the old object is not here anymore, and the new object is a new thing. So to the extent that you make a major change, the more major the change, the more likely we are to say that it looks like a shinui, and it's a new thing, and the entire thing is awesome. When it was nolad, it was already l'shem avodah zarah. So the kamash malon could be one of two things, but the more likely thing is that the shinui is not sufficient. I presume that if you took the stone and you chopped it up into four pieces, and then you did something, it might be at a certain point we would say that in fact is like an Eben Shehatzava Mitzvah or the tree. Again, I'm not sure what you would do to a tree, but it could be. So I suspect what the Gemara, if the issue is one of shinui, I suspect the answer is that this is not a real shinui.